Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams of the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, Josh Heupel is continuing to build his first football staff, and we don't want to get too caught up in that because by the time you listen to this podcast, that staff might have changed. So we're gonna plow past that and look a little bit more bigger picture, I guess, as Josh Heupel continues to prepare for his first season as Tennessee's football coach. And when this coaching search unfolded, John, I think one of the names we heard a little bit, particularly on the wish list of certain Tennessee fans, was that of Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, former Tennessee coach. And some fans really would have liked to have seen Lane back at Tennessee. It would have been a splashier hire than Josh Heupel, for sure. Do you think that would have been a better hire than Josh Heupel?
Just on the surface, when you look at the resumes and records, you could say yes. But there's this undercurrent with Lane, this uncertainty, like, what might he do? What might happen? And if your program's going on to probation anyway, and you need to be extra, extra careful, do you want Lane running it? I don't know. But his offensive reputation is bigger than Josh Heupel's, I think it's fair to say. Wouldn't you?
I think it's more polished, I would say, yeah. Longer track record, I think. Maybe not just in terms of years, but the control he had at high-profile places, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's the key, high-profile places. I mean, being the offensive coordinator in Missouri just doesn't get you a lot of pub. Heupel's offense has been very effective, and there are similarities. So I think also because Lane is just he's a personality and a Twitter aficionado, and so you fans would have been more excited about him. But I do think he and Josh bring the same thing to the table, at least offensively.
What's interesting, John, is that Josh Heupel beat Lane Kiffin two times as UCF's coach while Lane Kiffin was the coach at FAU. I mean, I don't know if that's a great measuring stick there because Heupel was coming in on the heels of what Scott Frost had achieved, but he kept it going against FAU in those first two seasons and beat Lane twice. And Lane in year one at Ole Miss went 5-5, generated some excitement, particularly for a couple reasons. One, because it's Lane Kiffin and there's always intrigue and excitement following Lane Kiffin. But two, I think it helped his the image of the job he was doing there in his first season when Ole Miss hung with Alabama throughout a week three game and ultimately lost 63-48. They couldn't stop Alabama at all, but they did pile up a lot of points in ways that other opponents didn't against the Crimson Tide. And overall, Ole Miss finished 5-5. They closed with a bowl game victory against Indiana. But I think generally that first season was reasonably well regarded for Lane Kiffin, the way he debuted there. Do you think Josh Heupel can be as successful in year one at Tennessee as what Kiffin was in his first year at Ole Miss? Because you know, it really may not be fair to make those comparisons, but fair or unfair, it's going to happen. And it's going to happen, I think, even more so because Ole Miss is set to play Tennessee during this 2021 season. So you're going to have Kiffin returning to Neyland Stadium. And so it's going to be a topic out there in front of us all year long. Do you think Heupel can match what Lane Kiffin did in his first season there at Ole Miss?
I think record-wise he can, but it would be a different kind of record. It's apples and oranges. Kiffin did that in an all-SEC season. And few people in SEC football history have gotten as much out of a loss as Lane did against Alabama. I know Florida got credit for hanging with Alabama in that SEC championship game, but the Ole Miss game, more so than the Florida game, I thought Alabama might lose this game. I really felt that way. I didn't feel that way in the Florida game, even though it was close at times. I just thought Alabama would prevail. But Alabama's defense looked crippled against Ole Miss. So I just think he got a lot of mileage out of that. And so I think it would be hard to to match that, I don't know if Josh Heupel has as many offensive weapons as Lane did, but I do think he could win. He could certainly have a 500 regular season as Lane did. I think that kind of offense, the up-tempo offense that Lane ran at is running at Ole Miss, and what Josh Heupel has preached and implemented at UCF, as his predecessor did, can really, really help level the field at times, particularly early in the season, and particularly during a COVID pandemic when guys maybe aren't as in shape as they would be normally. So I think in that respect, he can do some things similar, perhaps, that Lane did with Ole Miss. Perhaps Josh Heupel can do some of that at Tennessee. And in a best case scenario, he will get the fans excited, not by just what he does, but by what he could do.
Let's use a different measuring stick of comparison, I guess, John. You look back at the first season for past few Tennessee coaches. Lane Kiffin was the last one to have a winning record in his first year. He went 7-6 in year one, in his only season as Tennessee's coach. And then you run down the line. Derek Dooley was 6-7 in his first season as Tennessee's coach, and a tenure that just never got on track. Butch Jones went 5-7 in 2013 in his first year on the job. And then Jeremy Pruitt went 5-7 in his first season in 2018. So it's sort of a low bar there for Heupel to pass, to have more success in his first season than recent Tennessee coaches. Do you think that's reasonable to expect him to top that mark, to maybe go 6-6, at least top the mark of Butch Jones and Jeremy Pruitt, and go 6-6 in year one? And also, how do you think that would be received by Tennessee fans? Do you think 6-6 would be regarded as a pretty respectable inaugural season for Josh Heupel?
Yeah, I think it's very possible, almost likely, that he could go 6-6, then win a bowl, and you have a winning you could match Lane Kiffin's 7-6 record, and you would have the tie for the best record of any of these guys during Tennessee's dark ages, for lack of a better term. But I think the schedule is a big factor in that. I think this is a lighter schedule. If you look at the schedule, I don't have it in front of me right now, but if you look at what Butch Jones went against in his first season and what Derek Dooley went against in his first season, they were really overmatched. Tennessee has a favorable non-conference schedule. It's not playing Oklahoma or Oregon or somebody like that.
Right. Derek Dooley and Butch Jones both played both played Oregon in their first season. So you're right. And Tennessee's most challenging non-conference opponent in this 2021 season will be Pittsburgh, which I'm not counting as a victory. Actually, if I'm mapping out wins and losses for this 2021 season, I look at that Pittsburgh game as a toss-up at best. And actually, if I were picking it now here as we sit in early February, mid-February, I'd pick Pittsburgh to win that game. But even so, Tennessee has more of a chance there, I think, than either of those games against Oklahoma, Oregon in the Butch Jones or Derek Dooley tenures. But then you have that crossover game with Ole Miss, John. It stands out as such an important game in the 2021 schedule because it's more winnable than some of your other crossovers against West opponents in certain years, and it's certainly more winnable than the other West opponent that's always on the schedule in Alabama. But B, it's just going to be a pressure-packed game because it's going to be Kiffin's return to Neyland Stadium. It's going to be, you know, if Ole Miss wins that game, you're going to have a portion of the fan base saying, why didn't Tennessee hire Lane Kiffin? He would have taken the job. That's the belief, you know, in some circles anyways. I don't know whether he would have or he wouldn't have, but that's the belief out there that Kiffin would always be interested in coming back to Tennessee. And that's going to pop up if Tennessee loses that game is why didn't Tennessee pursue Lane Kiffin? Do you think it's fair to call that the most important game? I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but that's what we do here in February on the Volunteer State, John. Do you think it's fair to call that game the most important game in Josh Heupel's inaugural season?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I can see your point there. I'm not sure. It's hard to say from this vantage point, but I do think it's important. I think one way to look at it you automatically look at Georgia, Florida, and Alabama. It's three games Tennessee will lose. That's just on the surface. I mean, I don't think Florida will be as good as it was last year, but still, those are three games you expect Tennessee to lose. Ole Miss, you don't look at it in that sure of thing, but I think the game will be perceived similarly. And by that, I mean, if Tennessee beat Ole Miss, it would do a lot for the fan base. It would be, I can't say it would be like the same as beating Florida or beating Georgia, of course. Certainly wouldn't compare to beating Alabama, but it would be a similar type win, I think, where fans would be really encouraged. I'm looking at it more from a win perspective than a loss perspective. I see that as a game where Tennessee could actually gain a lot because people that were thinking, oh, Lane Kiffin, we want Lane Kiffin. Well, what if he comes into Knoxville in his second year with more offensive weapons than what Josh Heupel seemingly has from this vantage point, and Tennessee pulls off a win? I think that would be really encouraging to the fan base. So I think it would be kind of a mixed bag because the people that really wanted Lane Kiffin and Tennessee loses, they're going to just say, well, there you go. We should hire Lane Kiffin and won't consider other factors. But by increasing the importance of that game, you also could make it a victory by Tennessee could be dramatically increased too with the fan base.
Are there any advantages that you think Josh Heupel has over some of Tennessee's previous coaches that they've rattled through here since Philip Fulmer?
It's a good way to put it.
Right. Do you think he enjoys any advantages? Because I've made the point that I actually think his roster is thinner than what Butch Jones left for Jeremy Pruitt. You know, there was a lot of talk at that time about how Butch Jones left the cupboard pretty bare. You know, had those back-to-back 9-win seasons, but by the time Butch left, he didn't leave the program in a real great shape for Jeremy Pruitt. And I think that was probably fair criticism, but I also think in hindsight, there was some talent that Butch Jones left behind. I mean, you think about the defensive line throughout Jeremy Pruitt's first season; those were all Butch Jones leftovers, and Kyle Phillips and Shy Tuttle, Daniel Batuli, who was the team's best defensive player for a couple of years, was a Butch Jones leftover, Daryl Taylor. And then you look even on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, yes, Pruitt re-added Juwan Jennings back to the program. So I don't know whether you consider him at that point a Butch Jones leftover or not. He'd been dismissed from the program. But, you know, you can go down the line, Marquez Callaway, Josh Palmer. I mean, those were Butch Jones guys. So I think in hindsight, we can say that maybe the depth of talent wasn't real great left behind by Butch Jones, but there was some pieces there. And when I look at what Josh Heupel inherits, I see a thinner roster in terms of talent that he's stepping into than what Jeremy Pruitt had in year one. Do you agree or disagree with that? And do you see maybe any other advantages or disadvantages that Heupel has that maybe his predecessors didn't?
I think Jeremy Pruitt's disadvantages were overhyped, in part because Philip Fulmer, the athletic director at the time, hired him, and he wants his guy to look good. And they made it very clear that Butch Jones had left Tennessee with absolutely nothing. Well, go back to poor Derek Dooley. I mean, he inherited Philip Fulmer's recruits from 08 was Fulmer's last season. Then 09, Kiffin comes in there. And he had some celebrated signees, but most of them were overrated. And so then Dooley gets started late with recruiting. I thought he was at a huge disadvantage, more so than Jeremy Pruitt. And then he had a tougher schedule to combat, even though than Pruitt's first season. So for Heupel's disadvantage, yeah, because the roster's been thinned out. So I know Tennessee, not all these guys are great players, but some of them are good players, and we're seeing where they're transferring and other schools like them. So he's lost a lot of good players. So I would say, yeah, he's in a much more difficult situation than what Jeremy Pruitt inherited from Butch Jones. So sure, I don't know if that's something that Danny White, the new AD, would talk about so much, But I think it factored into it that it was overhyped in Pruitt's case because of Fulmer, perhaps.
I think that's a good point. And you add in it that Butch Jones, I think, was so disliked throughout the fan base by the time he left. He was a real easy figure, I think, to kick while he was down and to put a lot of that blame, you know, any lack of success that you may have in the first year of the next coach, you could just say, well, that's Butch's fault. He left the program in terrible shape. I think in hindsight, you look back at it and I don't think Butch left the program in great shape by any means. If it was in great shape, he probably wouldn't have been fired in the first place. He would have won more than four games in his final season. But I do think looking back, there were some pieces there. Now, maybe Josh Heupel can develop some of the pieces he's inheriting here at Tennessee from Jeremy Pruitt. But as you mentioned, the wave of departures for the transfer portal really, really thins the herd here. I mean, if you wouldn't have had any of these transfer portal exits, I think you could have made a case that Heupel stepped into a better scenario than what Jeremy Pruitt did. But you know, with the departures of guys like Eric Gray, Wanya Morris, Jameer Johnson, I mean, you know, again, Gray looks like has been a pretty solid player. Wanya Morris and Jameer Johnson, you know, not so much, have been pretty average. But they have started a lot of games at Tennessee, hurts your offensive line depth. And it kind of goes to your point that not a lot of stars hit the portal, but guys that were playing a lot of snaps. And then you look on defensively, Henry Toa and Kavaris Crouch, they haven't made their final decision yet as to whether they are, in fact, transferring. But they're sitting there in the transfer portal. I mean, that's your two starting inside linebackers, whereas Jeremy Pruitt inherited Daniel Batuli and Darren Kirkland. So I do think it is a tougher hand that he's dealt here. And also, when you look back on Jeremy Pruitt's recruiting classes, and I know he had some highly rated classes, but you look back at that first recruiting class, two of the top four recruits in that class are gone. J.J. Peterson, gone into the wind, never really played throughout his career here. And Bryce Thompson is headed for the NFL draft. You look at the next class, Darnell Wright, still here, hasn't developed yet, but he's still here. But Wanya Morris, gone. Henry Toa, Kavaris Crouch in the transfer portal. So three of the top four guys there are either gone or in the portal. You look at the next class, top player in that class is Key Lawrence. He's gone, transferred. You look at the 2021 class here, and Dylan Brooks, the top-rated player from this current class that signed in December, has asked for a release from his national letter of intent. And intends, you know, based on that, to go elsewhere. So really you run down through the line and a lot of the recruiting success that Jeremy Pruitt had either A, hasn't developed into much, or B, is no longer with the program or at least has one foot in the transfer portal and is eyeing the exit. And I do think that the deck is kind of stacked against Josh Heupel in year one.
And all those points you're mentioning and all those players that are going elsewhere maybe didn't pan out, it just reminds me that what a lousy job Pruitt's staff did of developing players. And that was a criticism of Butch Jones. Go to a dramatically different head coach, and you still have the same problem. I think we're going to see a lot of these guys that left Tennessee turn out to be better players elsewhere. It's just a guess, but somebody like Ty Chandler, who sort of, I don't know, he showed great promise starting out, and then he kind of just didn't progress much. Then Eric Gray comes in, basically takes a starting job. But I think Ty Chandler has some talent, and I think you put him in the North Carolina offense, I think he's going to have the best year of his college career. And I think there's some other guys like that. I just think Pruitt had more talent than that 3-7 record showed.
Covered up the name at the top of the resume, John, for Lane Kiffin and Josh Heupel. This experiment, you would know based on those resumes who's who, so it may not be a fair experiment. But let's say you didn't. I think I would still say Lane Kiffin probably would have been the better hire, but I don't think the gap is really all that terribly big between the two resumes there. Lane Kiffin has more head coaching experience, not necessarily for the better in some cases, but he does have more head coaching experience, and he has been at the higher level program with his OC experience there at Alabama, overlapping a year while Josh Heupel was at Missouri. But I don't feel like the gap is that huge. But however, I just think it goes to show that perception sometimes can be shaped by how your name is viewed in the industry. I mean, Lane Kiffin's done a great job, I think, drumming up support in the national media. He comes across as a guy who, you know, he's not engaging in coach speak. He's relatable. He does all these national media hits with Tennessee fans. He's always kind of teasing them on Twitter, acting like he still loves Tennessee, wouldn't mind coming back here someday, maybe. You know, I think it just goes to show the power of perception, when in reality, I don't feel like the coaching resumes are that much different. Or do you think there's a bigger gap than what I'm seeing?
It's a tough one because Lane Kiffin was at such high profile places when he was fired. He was fired from an NFL team, the Raiders. He was fired. He didn't have any success. Goes to Southern Cal under very difficult circumstances, left Tennessee for there. But the NCAA sanctions were a big, big factor in his failure there, which wasn't abysmal. High profile program, though. So he's been fired from two places. But you make a great point. It was like the firings were almost viewed as kind of a fluke because, well, the NFL, the Raiders were kind of a mess back then. Southern Cal with all this NCAA stuff going on and severe recruiting restrictions in terms of scholarship limitations. And I think he won 11 games one season. So he was not criticized much for failure. I don't think many coaches have done as poorly, gotten fired twice and come out of it with as good a reputation as Lane Kiffin has as a coach. Look at Josh Heupel. Again, you talk about perception. He's got a good record as a head coach. He had success as an offensive coordinator at Missouri. But then perception. He got fired at Oklahoma. His alma mater. He won a national championship there under Bob Stoops as a quarterback. He was an assistant coach and eventually an offensive coordinator there under Stoops. I think he was there when it's something like 8 years. And yep. He gets fired. So you look at that like, well, you know Bob Stoops loved this guy. I mean, he'd been his quarterback, his assistant coach, won a national championship with him, and he's firing him. I think that creates a perception in itself. So it's really an interesting way that two guys might be viewed, I think.
Yeah, and then you add in that Josh Heupel's worst season at UCF was his most recent season, so you have a little bit of recency bias in there. Of course, Lane Kiffin had a losing season at FAU too, but it wasn't his final season there. It was his second season, and that just kind of gets glossed over a little bit there.
It does.
It's sort of like the other shortcomings on Kiffin's resume. He kind of does a great job of just papering over any of those deficiencies. But John, we've kind of been all over here, but I want to close by looking a little bit again at 2021 expectations and also bring in the investigation a little bit. You know, of course, Tennessee is passing the baton here to the NCAA in this ongoing investigation into recruiting malfeasance that occurred under the watch of Jeremy Pruitt and his coaching staff. Tennessee, as has been well documented at this point, expects major NCAA violations to come from this. But as we know in these scenarios, the NCAA takes forever and a day to bring down judgment and potential penalties. And usually what happens in the meantime is schools decide whether they're going to self-impose penalties while they're waiting on the NCAA decision in hopes of those self-imposed penalties will cause the NCAA to go lighter on the punishment when it's their turn. We've talked about whether Josh Heupel can get to 6 wins in this inaugural season, surpass the performance of Butch Jones and Jeremy Pruitt in year one by making a bowl game. But I think the question looms whether Tennessee will self-impose a bowl ban in year one of the Heupel era. I don't think we will get an NCAA decision at that point, so I don't think we'd be in a scenario where the NCAA would be imposing a bowl ban for the 2021 season. But the question is still out there for Tennessee. What do you think Tennessee should do? Should they, before the start of this season, self-impose that bowl ban in hopes that that means when the NCAA judgment comes down later, that the NCAA will not issue a bowl ban? Or should Tennessee say, no, we're going to go for a bowl game here in 2021, and we'll take our chances with the NCAA, maybe self-impose some other penalties that aren't a bowl ban, and come what may.
In general, I might go along with self-imposing a bowl ban, but in this case, I wouldn't. This will take a couple of years before the NCAA passes down punishment, a sentence. So I think by that time, I don't know how good Tennessee will be then either. I don't think it'll be competing for championships. I don't think we'll be talking about a major bowl. We might be talking about the same kind of bowl Tennessee could go to this year. So I would not do that. I think Tennessee has already done substantial things. I mean, how many chancellors go to a press conference and talk about the violations are stunning, about how severe these recruiting violations are, and just getting rid of so many people in the involved with recruiting, two assistants, Jeremy Pruitt, the AD's gone. He wasn't fired. Wink, wink, but he's gone and is getting a severance package. So I think Tennessee has done so much. They've been so aggressive in doing this. I just don't see how the NCAA can't weigh that. It's been extremely forthcoming. Not many programs have been that forthcoming. And so I think the NCAA will feel like, well, we got to do something, though. So I think it could impose a one-year bowl ban. I just don't know that the program will be that much farther along in 2 years. Let's say it's not even the 22 season. It's a 23 season. I still don't see that it would be that maybe that far along, because I think the possibility of sanctions could impact its recruiting. So I would go ahead and go for it this year, because I think it would be a very positive thing for the program, be positive for the fans. You know, you go from 3-7 to a bowl. That's significant progress. Forget what the schedule was like. Bottom line, you had a better season, first-year guy. So it gives you some positive momentum. And I think Tennessee really needs that right now.
One word of caution I would say for Tennessee, though, you mentioned these sweeping personnel changes and admitting guilt. I don't think that the NCAA is going to recognize personnel changes and admission of guilt as penalty or punishment. I mean, at the end of the day, Tennessee fired some coaches and an athletic director that the chancellor probably didn't really want employed here anyway. I don't think Dondi Plowman really wanted Jeremy Pruitt and Philip Fulmer in charge of her football program and athletic department, respectively. They're not people she hired, and I think she believes she's better served by not having them employed at the University of Tennessee today. Now, I'm not saying that she is real pleased about these NCAA violations that are coming around the corner. I think probably not. But I do think, you know, if Tennessee thinks, well, we fired all these people, we can expect the NCAA to take it easy on us now. I don't think the NCAA is going to see personnel changes as punishment. But I do think, to your point, you know, they really kneecapped themselves so much by by going out there and talking about how many violations occurred and firing all these people and really kind of hurt the perception of the program. I think there is something to be said for trying to quickly regain some momentum and make a bowl game in 2021 rather than, you know, further cripple yourself, so to speak, I guess, by imposing a bowl ban for this season and potentially setting your program back further than what it already is.
Well, I think we're playing a guessing game here, which is really difficult with the NCAA. But I guess I'm looking at it like we've seen so many schools now just drawing a line in the sand and saying, no, we're going to fight this with everything we can. And that's kind of been the theme recently. And some schools, you could say, got away with stuff by doing that. I think enough of that has happened that the NCAA might look kindly on a program that doesn't do that. And the fact that Tennessee was so forthcoming and said, we're not covering up anything. We're amazed that all of this happened. And we want to clean this program up. We want to get rid of all these people. We want to clean it up. It's bad. We're not minimizing what happened here. We're maximizing, because we want to win with integrity. I just think the way things have been going, that the NCAA might just find that refreshing. That's strictly a guess. I've got no evidence to back that up.
Of course, the real potential pitfall here would be Tennessee not self-imposing a bullpen, going 5-7, not making a bowl game, and then getting hit with a bowl ban later in a year where they're set to make a bowl. So I guess that's the one pitfall there, is if you think you're not going to go 6-6 this year, why not just self-impose the bowl ban now?
Yeah, you need to go 6-6.
Yeah. All right, John, we'll look ahead more to the 2021 season. I'm sure here in the off season, it's one of our favorite things to do during the off season is project and pontificate about what's to come in the upcoming season. More later, but for now, thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.